discovery of the New World was that the rich of Europe had been spoiled by the spices and the exotic dishes that they were able to prepare. After there had been expeditions into Asia, into India and China and so forth, for a while the Mongols who ruled China were friendly to the Westerners. They were friendly to their missionaries. They were friendly to this coming. But when the Ming Dynasty took over, they were very unfavorably disposed toward the Westerners. Once you get spoiled to tea and these things that these people thought were status symbols, they began to be very upset. And so new routes were looked for. Now remember that the idea had always been that the earth was flat and that the heavens were like this. Angels would put the sun in its place and then take it down at the end of the day and start the stars and the moon on there transverse on this flat earth.
That changed on the top.
Now Galileo proposed that the earth was round, and as his reward, the Catholic Church threatened him with excommunication. And he recanted of that so that he could remain in a state of grace. But he was the one that suggested that the earth might be round. He studied of astronomy and so forth. They didn't believe that. But up until that time, people had the idea that as they sailed beyond the horizon, that they would drop off. Now, of course, in the Mediterranean, the end of the horizon was just beyond Spain and beyond England. And because of their small ships and so forth, very few of them that ever traversed beyond the horizon ever came back. And so they stayed, within that small area. But then they began to look for a route around Africa. You see, in other words, if they could sail down the coast of Africa, they knew that there was an east and west coast to that. Surely there would be a way through. Now, of course, the first people that ever came to the New World were the Norsemen. But they did not do anything about really settling and making this part of the civilized world. So the first man that we look to as the beginning was Columbus. And as I call your attention to the fact that Ferdinand and Isabella, the rulers of Spain, had sacked or divested themselves of all of the money. The treasury of Spain was depleted. The reason it was depleted was that they were driving out the Mohammedans, and any time you conduct a war, it's going to be expensive. If we go to war with the Arab world, we're going to have taxes that like you've never seen before, and a war economy that just is unbelievable. But Columbus was not looking for America. He was looking for a way to India. That's what we call the Indians. Indians is that when he came here, he thought he had reached India, and he named the people that populated this as Indians. And Spain, and Britain, or England. Now remember, these were the sailors. These were the people that had done some navigation. And he gives you a number of people here that Prince Henry of Portugal, and how that Cabot came, and he came across and landed in Canada and came down the coast, and what he was looking for was the passage that people had always rumored was somewhere that they could sail right through this continent and on into India. And later on you'll hear about the Northwest Passage, and that's what they were looking for, was a way to sail. Of course, there wasn't any. There wasn't any east-west traverse until we put in the Panama Canal. Then we gave it away. But the only way that you can possibly do it is to go around South America through the Straits of Magellan. And they are just unbelievably dangerous, the winds and so forth. And of course, it is named for the explorer Magellan. Now, Magellan did not sail around the earth. He sailed as far as the Philippines, and there he was killed. But his crew actually sailed all the way around the world. And they came around the coast of South America, the Straits of Magellan, and they went to the Philippines, and that's where Magellan was killed. And then they came around the Cape of Good Hope, which is at the lower point of Africa, and then up the coast of Africa and back to Portugal.
That's just what she wants. She has all the time. I said, give me that.
I just asked for this question. She had $300.
$300. You wouldn't be able to pay like that. It was a gold charm.
Yeah.
For a long time, I built a charm bracelet for my daughter. Different countries and so on. I guess that thing is really valuable now. You know, at that time, when I built the charm bracelet, it wasn't all that expensive.
My daughter got about almost $8,000 a woman. This woman, without the chain.
And I can't buy them gold anymore.
No.
Forget that. I remember they used to have this gold leafing that they would do in public buildings.
Yeah, they tell them in the office.
But you couldn't do that. Of course, the guys that painted the gold leaf, they were especially trained to.
I have a DVD that they figure in. I'm going to ride on that TV.
To penetrate the inland, of course, Cortez came into Mexico, and Mexico was ruled in by the Aztec Indians. They had a pretty far advanced civilization. And, but again, Cortez came with the idea of gaining gold. And so that his men did not turn back, once he landed, he burned the ships. Not, isolated them. They had to stay there. And these men were called conquistadores, that is, conquerors. Again, you remember that a gun, a musket, fire one of those. Had an Indian that had bows and arrows, very simple weapons. It would frighten them to death. The Spaniards had horses. They had armor. You can imagine what that would look like. A man with a breastplate that when the arrow hit it, broken too, and gunpowder, which were all unknown to the Aztecs. And of course, two other factors, he said, aided the Europeans. One, discontent among the subject tribes, which looked for a chance to break. In other words, here were the Aztec tribe was the ruling tribe, but they had as much, I guess you'd call it racial prejudice as. And as there is in almost anywhere. You find that anybody who is ruling has a tendency to tear down those that they are ruling over. As I mentioned, this is a problem in Ireland. This is what is happening in Africa. They were dominated by white people that were imposed on them. The Belgian Congo, case in point. I had some friends that were missionaries over in the Congo. And because of the close alliance of the Belgian government with the Catholic Church, the Congolese just caught a lot of Christians. Part of the ruling class. And that was the reason that a good many of our evangelical Christian missionaries were killed. It wasn't that they had been unjust or unfair in any of their dealings, but it was the fact that they were identified as Christians. And you see, you just get that whole blanket that people just take a big one. Brush and they paint everybody the same way. And I remember talking to this man. He was planning to go back to the Congo. And I said, how can you do that? You know, he didn't have the firing squad. And he got over the fence. He got away. And if you remember, there was a doctor over here at Torrance that was killed. His brother is still a doctor there in Torrance. I can't call his name. But anyway, he had been on the staff out there at the Harvard General, and he had gone as a missionary in the Congo. And this one fellow that I knew had actually escaped at the same time. But I said, how can you go back? And he said, well, he said, I would rather be in the Congo in God's will than in, he said, I'm safe in the Congo in God's will than I would be pastoring the largest church in the United States. How did that come to me? I sure made a mistake asking him, because, you know, after all, if God puts me somewhere, it's his duty to see to it that what he wants to happen will happen. Mm-hmm. It's my business. You know, it's like the fellow said, what if God told you to jump through that brick wall? He'd have been my job to jump. Mm-hmm. And God's job to open up the bricks. I thought about that a lot of times. I have a tendency not to want to jump. But anyway, it was Cortez that came here, and he looked for the cities of gold. And there was always this talk about seven cities of pure gold. And he looked and looked and looked, spent his life looking for those cities of gold. And he also talks here about Pizarro in Peru. Again, he came there, he found a lot of gold, he found a lot of silver. And at this time, Atualapa tried to buy his freedom. He was the king of the people of Peru, and he tried to buy his freedom by filling a room with gold and silver. And that room was 7 feet high. And of course, as the reward, they killed him. In fact, when he would kill some of them, he was taking molten gold and pouring it down their throats. And, of course, they burned up to the rock.
About heartburn.
Well, remember that these people were coming in the name of the Catholic Church. And, again, you have to understand their thinking. I've got to save these people's soul. And they have their religious beliefs. And instead of preaching, and instead of teaching, and instead of trying to lead people to an understanding, they just kill them. That's why, if you're not going to join the Catholic Church, you just kill
them. That also can't live with different code. And he was a governor to blow up his ship so his men couldn't leave in. He couldn't leave in.
No.
So he said, if I can't even just die in with it, I can't come here and get it.
Well, he's going to get to go and rebuild this and go back. But again, I suppose he also expected others to come. And he planned to get to go. But again, you see, if I am the leader, I'm the one that gets it. The crew doesn't. They're not. You realize that Cabot, for sailing over here and claiming Canada and the United States, the area of the United States, for Great Britain, was given 10 pounds. By the king, and was knighted. And that's all he got. 10 pounds. Well, can you imagine buying Canada and most North America for £10? That's some reward, isn't it? And you got to make another trip then after that.
Yeah,
that's
the ever after.
Yeah.
£10 in the night.
Well, I can remember when the pound was worth $5. It never was all that much money.
Let's see what it is. What is it? About $2. 4 or 5 cents.
Well, they didn't overdo it on it.
No. I think the last time I was in, it was about $1.90. You see, the dollar has dropped.
A couple of dollars to go out with hamburgers on.
There were others that he mentions here that you need to know about. Ponce de Leon. Again, what did he look for? He looked for the fountain of youth. Do you realize he went as far as the area of Hot Springs, Arkansas? In search of this fountain of youth. In fact, they have every year in Hot Springs a festival about Cortez. Ponce de Leon. And the fact that he came up there and thought of those as maybe the place to have eternity. Well, you just think of how people want to be done. I understand that. Ronald Reagan says he doesn't dye his hair. Yeah. He dyes his face. Looks dyed.
No problem is put on a dye.
Well, but people want to be young. I had a church lady in our church, and she was, up in her 60s, but she had this flame to wear. She said, Brother Kenneman, I will have a gray hair as long as they put it in a box. And her husband had a little trouble getting the job, so she just dyed his hair so he looked younger. But isn't that true of everybody? In other words, here was this man that looked for the fountain of youth. I want to be young. And the only way a man can ever turn the clock back is to be born again. And become a Christian and then live forever. Mm-hmm. But that isn't the simple solution. The way people want to do it is to go to health spas and sit in hot baths and whatever in an attempt to have.
Dr. Lane is the dead of the health spas and you look like you'll eat the crap on that.
Well, I had some difference and thought he was. Remember, every year he used to get in the on his birthday up north and full of bone. I think he swam across the bay up in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And these people just thought that was so wonderful. That's stupid. You know, but he talks about John Cabot, he talks about Montgomery and all of these men that came to the New World. Joliet. By the way, you see all of the names that we have here? Portuguese by the name of Albuquerque. And I still have trouble spelling that. I don't know how he went through life spelling his name. I have trouble just spelling it one or two times. I usually look it up when I write on her. LaSalle and Marquette. These were missionaries. Marquette was a Jesuit. Now remember what I told you about the Jesuits. They were started by Ignatius Loyola. So when you see a University of Loyola, it is a Jesuit institution. The Jesuits are the people of the Catholic Church. that are allowed to wear civilian clothes. They are the spies. In fact, Switzerland has a law that no Jesuit priest can even cross their borders. They've had that much difficulty with ordering Jesuits. You see, a Jesuit believes that the end justifies the means. He believes in what is called mental reservation. That is, I am not lying to you as long as I mentally reserve the truth. You see, I can tell you anything as long as I mentally reserve the truth. Now, again, remember, this is Roman Catholic leadership. We're not talking about just Mr. Anybody. But we're talking about Marquette. We're talking about these men that came and settled here in the West. We need to understand that. Then he talks about the Dutch. Remember that they settled in what was called New Amsterdam. Okay, that name mentions it. It's now New York. And that's the reason that the first church in New York City was the Dutch Reformed Church. And that's the reason that the Marble Collegiate Church, which is pastored by Norman Vincent Peale, is a Dutch Reformed Church. I was in New York some time ago, and the southern tip, where they early settled, looks out to where the Statue of Liberty is now, Ellis Island and so forth. But right south of Manhattan is called the Battery. And that's where the early people settled, and they had there a defense. They had a battery of weapons. As you walk up, you come to the place where President Washington first was sworn in as President of the United States. It looks right out toward the Battery. But just the New York Stock Exchange is here, where Washington first was inaugurated. And just down the street is this Dutch Reformed Church. And it had concert at noon. And so my wife and I thought, you know, that'd be a nice thing to walk in there. In this religious concert, and we did. And it was a rock and roll concert. And I mean, this acid rock. I don't mean, you know, a religious rock in any sense. And here were people in there eating their lunch and whatnot. And that place was packed. I saw some people looking at my wife, and they didn't have a seat. And they just stood there because they knew he wouldn't be there long. We dug out like sore thumbs, and when we walked, boy, they hit those seats. But I thought, now here's what has happened. And I think we need to understand this principle. And that is that this church is heavily endowed. In other words, these people would die off, they would be endowment funds to that church. And so that church does not have any financial problems. And so it is in the hands of kooks. It is in the hands of the liberals. You take this Methodist church up in San Francisco, and it is a memorial Methodist church. And it is the one that sponsors these homosexual dances and so on and so forth. And I looked into it, and the old man that left his fortune to that church is a memorial, and that's where his name is. He was a Sunday school teacher. And he, with an old blind Methodist, the old shouting Methodist. But he left them a fortune, and now here are these liberals have taken over that church. They don't need money. They've got all these funds coming in. And they're responsible to nobody. They don't need to take up an offering. They've got all of this money. And you know, people think, boy, that would be wonderful. If we just had a church that didn't have any financial problems or any, if we just had oil well and just pump, then we can just sit here and have church and worship, not worry about it. That's nonsense. That isn't good. And I think that's one of the problems in our schools today. Chicago University was started in a prayer meeting. The University of Chicago at one time was a Baptist school. Yale, Harvard, Princeton was one of the great areas of fundamentalism at one time, but not anymore. The University of Southern California was started as a Christian school. Well, you'd be hard pressed to find a whole lot of Christianity at USC right now. But the thing that I'm saying is that they got endowments and they got funds that were separate and apart from the churches that sponsored them. And so they went into what we now see as ultra-liberalism. But now, that's again what's happened in New York to these Dutch Reformed churches. The Dutch settled there. The Dutch merchants and so forth, they left their fortunes to these churches. And those fortunes, just think, if you had $1,000 somebody had deposited 100 years ago to your account in an Innisbury. Man, what would it be today? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
a lot of them probably turned over in graves after they gave them all that money and went with them.
I'm sure that's true. But again, we need to keep that principle in mind. I think that any time that a church becomes dependent upon the gifts of one person, he said, it is the Lord that said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. For years there was a man by the name of Letourneau, R.G. Letourneau. Maybe you've seen these big earth-moving equipment. Well, Letourneau is the one that produced those. And there is a Letourneau Bible Institute down on the border. He was a very strong and active Christian, J.C. Penney, the same way.
Yep.
I had one of the deacons at Corpus had graduated from, I think it was called the College of the Ozarks. And J.C. Penney had financed pretty well. But you see, what if, say, R.G. Letourneau walked up to me and he said, now, I believe in what you're doing. And I'm going to see to it that your family and your financial needs are taken care of. Now, St. Letourneau is now dead. But even if he had been alive, he could have become dissatisfied with something I did and say, okay, forget it, Father. Or he could have lost his mind and, gone out away from church work and so forth. And where would I be? You see, if I depended on a man, no matter how wealthy that man is, but I know churches that have built themselves around the wealth of a church member. And they think, oh, we've got it. They know you don't have it. And a missionary that feels like, well, now everybody's going to support me. No, you're going to have to learn that it is the Lord. And the Lord's work is open to attack when you allow yourself to become dependent upon anything but the tithes and offerings of God's name. Well, now he goes on and he talks about the invasion of the East. And remember, we're just now getting getting over some of this. When we go back to the origins of World War II, the Dutch East Indies, remember that was under the power. Well, I mentioned the Belgian Congo a while ago. Have you ever looked at Belgium? That little tiny nothing. And here was this great big area of Africa that this little tiny country in Europe controlled. Or Portugal. Here's just a little piece off of Spain that is Portugal. And yet they control much of Africa, much of Asia, because of their sending out these settlers. England. Some of you aren't old enough to remember, but I'm old enough to remember that India was under the control of the British. And they had a man that rose up, you might say, and Mahatma Gandhi. And he led those people that revolt against the English. Mahatma Gandhi said, "I would be a Christian if I could ever meet one." Well, again, remember, there was a man that was a Hindu, and here were all of these English that were preaching one thing and doing another thing. You know, if I really believe in the Lord, I believe in equality, I believe in the dignity of human beings, but that wasn't true. Queen Elizabeth incorporated the East India Company, and granted it a monopoly on all the trade from the Cape of Good Hope to the Straits of Magellan.
She had to monopolize
that. That's right. But again, how did she get that? Through military power. They had, you know, the English fleet, and they had these men of war, these battleships. And remember, the Dutch and the Spanish and the Portuguese and the English fought on the high seas for domination. And of course, it was when England turned back the Spanish Armada that then from then on, England was dominant in world trade. And, we still have that to carry on. What is it that people are objecting to in the world? What they call imperialism. You see, this is the thing that the communists have been able to turn on us, is the idea that we go in and we settle an area and we dominate those people. I wonder if we had been in the Philippines, how friendly we would be toward the United States. Or in Puerto Rico. Yesterday, some of our sailors were ambushed. But what's that all about? Well, there are people in Puerto Rico that resent the fact that they are neither fish nor fowl. They're not a state, and yet they are a possession of the United States. We are the ones that govern Puerto Rico, and yet they have no self-government, no self-determination. That was our objection, wasn't it, in England? No taxation without representation, see? All right now, here was Hawaii, Alaska, the Philippines, Puerto Rico, Cuba belonged to us at one time. And, after all, these people say, we want to determine our own future. We want to determine what happens to us. And while we can, later on we'll get to this, Gladstone and Disraeli, they felt that it was the white man's burden, that's the way they talked about it, that here were the people of India, and that the blacks of Africa, and it was the a white man's burden to govern these people in the New World. That was the way they talked about it. Well, what did we do in this country? We kept driving the Indians back and back and back. Brother Moore and Brother Jones from Oklahoma, we had the Indians on reservations.
Mm-hmm.
And there they were, you know. I remember one of my preacher friends preached out on a reservation one time, and he called on one of these Indian brothers to pray. He said, "Do your own praying, you're getting paid for it." Again, don't you see what they were saying? They were saying, "We want to do our own thing. As long as you come in here and tell us what we've got to do, you do it." You see, we don't have any self-determination. We don't have any way of... we just do what you tell us that we can do. Look what we have done to the Navajos in Arizona. We've given them nothing. You know, boy, you go on that reservation and that land is really bad-looking stuff. We did the same thing in Oklahoma, the Cherokees and the Comanches.
You know, the one people that have more than anything else in those Indians that fought the hardest, the Apaches and Comanches, have the best land. Because they were wanting
Comanches.
Well, I'm saying they wanted to do something with them, give them leave. You know.
But even our treaties that we made with them, we have just violated time after time. We didn't honor them. But again, well, we have to understand the principle here. The idea of dominating another person is just so foreign to me that I have trouble identifying that this was a way of life. But they didn't look upon it as soft, it was our burden. We just have to take care of it. It's like children. You see, like, they can't think for themselves, they can't. They're not responsible. That's the way a lot of our missionaries do. They go into an area and they don't dress like we dress. They don't act like we act. See, that's what happened in Hawaii. You see, that the Congregationalists came out of New England and went over there and tried to make New England people out of those folks. And, you know, made them dress in a certain way and act a certain way. Then, of course, when the Missionary Baptists went out there, they reacted the other way. The churches in Hawaii don't take office. And the reason, you know, after all, we don't want to pressure these people into giving. And we don't want them to feel pressure. And so there isn't really of self-supporting work in Hawaii. Then they're subsidized by mainland churches. Mm-hmm. They have a little box out there. Then they put their money in those boxes. Pastor, dealing with missions, and police officers. And one of our young couples in the Navy. And he said, "Well, Brother Cameron," he said, "you know, we always give by check. So we'll have a record for our income tax giving." I said, "Just drop your check in missions." So I said, "That'll teach them." You know, after all, when somebody just, I've got to figure out whether I'm going to give it to the building fund or something. I believe in a church supporting the work. You know, not in, "Boy, I like soldiers. I'll give him." You know, we've run a popularity contest too long.
Right.
I like this brother, so I'm going to go there. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
Be careful about that. That's not good.
You would think that after different men would go over there that they would see what was going on and be different, but it seems like the majority are staying the same way.
Because the people have gotten into that routine. When I first went out there, I told him, I said, I don't know, he's pretty unscriptural here.
You really
want to. I said, you know, I was down in Panama not long ago, and the women sit on one side, and the men sit on the other side. And they feel that that's the only way that you can have church. Well, I went in, I sat down on the wrong side.
Yeah. That's crazy. I thought you
took out a
demonstrated one how to pray.